Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is a great day here at Worldwide KFUO. A great day on Faith and Family today as well. Lots of critters, some four-legged, some two-legged. We're going to talk with our friends at Lutheran Church Charities and a new venture that's going on that they just started not too long ago called Care 9 Military Ministry. Hope you can join us for that conversation. In the second half, we're going to take a look at the recent Jurassic World movie with the Reverend Chad Hoover. He's the department chair for theology at Concordia Lutheran High School in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So we'll talk with Chad during the second half and take a look at that movie. Hope you can join us for all of it. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin on our website. Just go to kfuo.org and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. There you'll find more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, and drop them a note. Say thanks for supporting Worldwide KFUO and all the and Faith and Family here at Worldwide KFUO. Joining me by phone today, Tim Hetzner. He's the president of Lutheran Church Charities and I have to say a fellow DCE as well. Tim, welcome back to Faith and Family.
My friend.
It's so good to have you with us today, Tim. Thanks for taking some time to be our guest and share with us today. Tell us about this new venture called Care 9 Military Ministry.
Well, Care 9, you know, we have the Comfort Dog ministry, national ministry, and what grew out of that was more and more invites where we were working with military and veterans and some of the unique challenges that they face and the unique mission field that's really out there. And so we launched a Care 9, K-A-R-E-9, ministry to military veterans and their families with the use of a comfort dog. We have the dog vested as with a military vest on it, and most of our dogs are named after dogs that have given their life in the line of service. And what's unique about it is we use veterans as handlers for the dogs when they go out with military or veteran events, which can be everything from VFW halls to the VA hospitals to military funerals to whatever that we're invited out. Yellow Ribbon Weekends we're doing now with military and veterans and their families. So it's a wonderful opportunity to bring healing and hope to the people that have served our country so faithfully in the military, and it's and some of the unique challenges that they face because of what they have given up and sacrificed, and many times come back with post-traumatic stress disorder and other issues that are war related or service related. So the dog is a bridge to help bring some comfort and relief, and of course the saving message of Jesus Christ is the hope that is given there. And it's a, you know, Andy, it's a tremendous mission field for our churches to engage in.
Well, let's introduce more of your team that are involved with Care 9 Military Ministry. Joining us now, Jim Morrison, Director of Care 9 Military Ministry. Jim, welcome to Faith and Family.
Well, thank you, Andy. Happy to be here.
Thanks. Glad to have you with us today. Jim, tell us about your work as the Director of Care 9 Military Ministry.
Very well. My work focuses on helping to coordinate the events that we attend, which we continue to have tremendous opportunity in that area, making sure we have enough of our veterans as well as our comfort dogs, our Care 9 dogs, at the events, and helping to just guide what goes on at that event and our participation. And as Tim said, we're very excited about this Yellow Ribbon program we've become involved in, which is a program that is run by the National Guard of the state of Illinois. And it is a reintegration program that works with veterans and their families after they have returned from deployment. So it's really a great service that's given to those men and women who have served us.
And let's also bring in Josh. Josh Hump serves as a Care 9 veteran. Josh, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us, how did you get connected with Care 9 Military Ministry?
Well, it was about a month ago, there was a volunteer for the Lutheran Early Response Team at my church in Roselle, and I had went to that, and on the fill-out form, I had put that I was a Marine veteran and of those skills, and then shortly thereafter, I was contacted by Jim and, you know, asked if I would like to come in and talk and see if I would become a handler. And, you know, with my past experiences of being a veteran with PTSD, it just became one of those eye-opening opportunities for me to help other vets my age and my range to just kind of see that there is a light at the end of that tunnel.
What have you learned in your time with Care 9 Military Ministry? And who's your pal? Who's your sidekick?
Right now I'm working with a dog named Brutus. He is fairly new, I would say. He's 1 year, and I'm in the early training stages of becoming a handler.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest thing that I've learned from this group here at LCC was that there is no stone that will go unturned for a veteran in need.
Jim, how does a dog like Brutus go from a recruit to a full-fledged soldier or sailor or airman or Marine?
Well, we start with our dogs at 8 weeks of age. We get them as puppies. We begin training them. We train them for about a year. They work primarily with their veteran handler. They live with their veteran handler from that time that they're 8 weeks until the time that they begin to serve. And they begin to serve almost immediately. It's an ongoing training kind of thing. And that is what we do with what we call our original squad of handlers, the original 9 people who started in this program. We also are now expanding this out to have, when we place a comfort dog in a Lutheran congregation, we ask that we identify a veteran in the congregation to be one of the handlers so that that dog can serve the dual purpose of a comfort dog and a Care 9 military dog, and serve the general community as well as the veteran community.
And let's talk more about how one becomes a handler as well. Jim, do you want to start that? And I know Josh can share with us a little
All
bit
right.
more about his process as well.
The person becomes a handler by being recruited to be a handler. They then begin working with the dog, learning the commands that the dog will learn, and specifically in our Care 9 program, our dogs respond to military commands rather than the normal training commands that dogs are given. For instance, normally the command given to a dog to lie down is just down. Well, in the military parlance, we tell them prone, and rather than say heel, we say march. And rather than say sit, we say at ease, so things like that to make it more. But so the veteran will work with this dog. We have so far twice a week, 2 hours each time, formal training, and then with our master trainer Alex Brooks, and then they will work on their own at home, continuing that training and reinforcing what they've learned.
And Josh, share with us about your training and becoming a handler.
Oh, well, the first day I did it, I knew it was something that I was going to love and enjoy doing. Like you said, the master trainer, Alex, is just outstanding. And just to see the work that you put in come into fruition in the events, just to go to those training classes and, to get back into that sense of that you have a purpose and you're caring for somebody other than yourself, as in the dog. And that dog, in turn, is caring for you more than he cares for himself. And then you just realize that you work together and you train together, and then you guys are in it together working for the same purpose and, you know, helping people and helping veterans. And then, you know, you just do the classes and you get your training in, and then when you're on your own with the dogs, there's never a time to not be training. And because there's never a time when there's a vet that's not in need, so whenever you're ready to go, you got to be ready to go.
Tim, can you share with us the response from those, from some of those who have been served by the Care 9 Military Ministry?
Well, you know, it's
for many of the veterans, and particularly the ones we get called out into, you know, they're at a point that they just feel very hopeless. And as you know, the suicide rate amongst veterans is, what is it, Jim, 21 a day?
21, 22 a day, yes.
Yeah, in the United States. And many of them are actually over the age of 55. So tremendous outreach potential and tremendous need out there to bring the mercy and the compassion and the presence of Jesus Christ to people. So, you know, we have veterans. In fact, one of our handlers, when I contacted him to ask him if he would be a handler and be part of this program, confessed a month later to Alex Brooks and then to me that he had already put into place a plan to commit suicide until we called him. And right now he suffers from Agent Orange from Vietnam, and just an incredible man, but sees a purpose now in his life to be able to touch other veterans because he knows what they've gone through. And I think that's the key, Andy, is we have learned that veterans serving veterans is the winning combination, because many veterans will not open up and talk to others unless they're another veteran, even their family. All the time we get family people that say, you know, my dad or my mother have never shared their war stories or anything about that. They just don't talk about it. And here they are talking with another veteran about it. And I think that's the winning combination. And it's been a pleasure, too, because we work with LCMS, Barnabas Ministry, because the LCMS has a large chaplain ministry. And so we work in tandem with them. And they give us leads on people that we ought to see. And in fact, Andy, I got to tell you, we're going to be down in your neighborhood. I was just down there last week. We are starting at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, a training center for our Comfort and Care 9 dogs.
Awesome.
And we're going to start that in September on campus, where we're going to use seminary students, people from the community, and also Lutheran Senior Services are partnering with us to train dogs down in that St. Louis area to not only serve the St. Louis area but broader aspect. And the training center will be on the campus of the seminary.
So I think it's
dogs going to the seminary.
That's what I was going to say. I think it's great that the Comfort Dogs are getting a valuable seminary education.
Yep. Well, the deal was they're going to teach dogmatics while they're there, but then they can do the rest. Yep. And who knows, we may even place, you know, when they come to time to get a call to serve a parish, if that parish wants to get into the Comfort Care 9 ministry. You know, I know Dr. Meyer has said, you know, could we, if a congregation wanted that, would we be able to work out the placement of a pastor and a dog together as they go to serve a congregation? And I said, that's exactly what we're doing. We work for our LCMS churches.
And see, we can't say the seminary has gone to the dogs. Now we can say the dogs have gone to the seminary. Is what we have
right.
to
the
say.
The dogs have gone to the seminary. I'm sure you and I, Andy, could sit down and come up with a lot of phrases to make that.
Well, I would love to hear. I'd love to hear more from some stories from Jim and Josh, particularly stories from the field of those, perhaps those people who you've encountered who have been served by the Care 9 military ministry dogs, some stories that really demonstrate the epitome of what the Care 9 military ministry is. We'll start with Jim and then we'll go to Josh.
Okay. The one that comes immediately to mind is we have two of our Care 9 dogs out in Freeport, Illinois, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church. And in February, we were called out there to serve at the funeral of a member of the church who also was in the military when he was killed. He was not killed in battle. He was in an auto accident at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. This was a much-loved son of the congregation. So we went out there with, I want to say we had about 12 dogs. And we attended the wake and the full military funeral the next day. And it was the impact that the dogs had on the people that were so grieving because of the death of this young man. He died 3 weeks after he was married. It was just a tragic situation. And we were able to bring some comfort and some peace and just the ability for people to sit with a dog and for a moment receive the comfort that only these dogs can give. And Andy, I've said this so many times since I've been on staff here at LCC, that we can talk for a long time about what the dogs do, and we can say very beautiful and wonderful things about what they do. But until someone actually sees it, it's hard to understand. But it's an amazing thing what they're able to do with people and for people, particularly those who are in a stressful situation, whatever the nature may be.
Josh, stories from the field of those who have been served by the Care 9 Military Ministry?
Andy, I haven't really done many mm-hmm. of those with LCC yet. Like I said, I'm just starting, but I have a fantastic story of these dogs working wonderful blessings in people's, and that's of my own. I was actually discharged from the Marines in 2010 with post-traumatic stress disorder, and for about 3 years, I wasn't me. And then I got a dog and started working that purpose of having, you know, something else in my life that gave me drive, that gave me that will to just keep going on and on. And then seeing it affect my life in a way of that this opportunity came to me where I knew that God had a plan that, you know, I made you suffer for a reason so you can understand that pain that other people are feeling and that you can be a beacon of hope for them to see that, you know, there is a light at the end of that tunnel. And then just seeing people's faces with these dogs, when I watch these guys go out with the dogs, it's just you can find the saddest, most depressed person in the world, and as soon as they see that dog, everything goes away. And they just feel that love because that dog is just giving you that unconditional love and attention that you feel that you need. And when you can deflect your anger into more of a caring emotion, feeling that, you know, it's not just me that I have to worry about. There's a dog here, too. And then when that dog looks at you and he's thinking the same exact thing, you know you're in the right place.
Jim, where do the Care 9 dogs visit? Where might we meet a Care 9 dog?
You might meet them at a VA hospital, a veterans center, a veterans health center. Today, we're going to a AMVET annual picnic in Fox River Grove, Illinois, bringing six dogs out there to see this event where about 300 veterans will be bused into this park, Lions Park in Fox River Grove, to have a picnic put on for them. They are guys who will come from veterans hospitals and so on. Tomorrow we'll be taking four dogs up to an event that is called Camp Hometown Heroes. This is a wonderful thing, Andy. This organization, Camp Hometown Heroes, they put on a summer camp each year for a week for the children of men and women who have lost their lives in combat. We will be going up there to serve these children and be with them for the day on Thursday. And on Saturday, we'll be going to one of those Yellow Ribbon events that I mentioned. On Sunday, I'm going to a church in Barrington to speak about our program, bringing a couple dogs. So it is you will see us everywhere. And often you'll see our dogs out at the handlers will bring them to Walmart with them when they go shopping or to Target or wherever it is and bring them out to dinner in the restaurant. You can see them most anywhere.
Well, very good. Tim, can you share with us why it is important for Lutheran Church Charities to reach our veterans and our service people?
Well, it's important that we reach anyone. That's what we're called as Christians to do. The field of need and the field of mission with our military and our veterans is just huge. And it's something that our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is so positioned to do because of our tremendous focus on and care for and concern with our military and veterans. So, and many of them, Andy, are not churched. You know, it's very interesting. In fact, one of the reasons many veterans don't go to church or they leave a church is if the American flag in the church is removed. and they say, if you don't want the American flag, you don't want me. And I know that's been an issue in our synod. Do you have American flag in the church or not? And I know some church bodies have even said not to have an American flag in the church. And there can be all kinds of reasons for that. But the bottom line is, to a veteran, they perceive that as they're not wanted. And many of our veterans, when they come back, have had a very difficult time, re-engaging back into the community, engaging into service. And they were, our Vietnam vets and others were not thanked when they came back. It was story after story I hear of how they were treated. And so, you have to go out to the veterans and where they're at. Like in any ministry, it's not, hanging up a sign and say, you all come. It's about Jesus, who called us to go out. And you go out to where they are, and you engage them on their turf, and you present Jesus to them by your presence and by your words, and God working through an amazing gift that he has given us, and that is dogs, and their sense of knowing the hurt in someone else. And so it is one of the most rewarding things as a professional in ministry, to be able to see this, because the real ministry, and I believe in our churches and all that, but you got to get outside of those walls, because that's where the lost are. And the dogs help congregations get outside their walls to engage with people in incredible ways, and to witness then God and Holy Spirit work in people's lives. And that's what floats my boat.
Josh, what are you looking forward to in this new venture as a Care 9 military ministry veteran?
Oh, Andy, what I think I'm most looking forward to is, like Tim said, is going out and actually, finding those veterans, because, being one myself and being in that position where, you didn't feel wanted, you don't feel like there's a purpose, and to getting to this point where I like to say is where this is my saving call right here, is what put me in a purposeful place. And, I just want to go out and find those guys that are lost, and then bring them back home and keep them all safe, because there is much bigger purposes for everybody out there, and there's no need for anybody to be depressed alone into the point of suicide.
Jim, with just about 30 seconds or so, share with us what you're looking forward to in the coming years with the Care 9 military ministry.
I'm just looking forward to be able to serve the Lord in any way he sends me with this ministry. It has been such a blessing in my life. I am also a veteran, but I am not I'm an old veteran. I served during the Vietnam era, but did not serve in Vietnam. And this has just been a blessing to me to see people's lives moved and enlightened by what these four-legged creatures can do. And so I look forward to just being a part of this and serving in any way that I can.
Very good. Well, check it out on LutheranChurchCharities.org. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being my guest today. Tim Hetzner, president of Lutheran Church Charities, thanks for being my guest today.
Hey, and KFUO, keep up doing the wonderful work. I hear about you guys all over and see the results and the fruit of your ministry.
Thank you so much. Jim Morrison and Josh Hopp, thanks, guys, for being my guest today.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to take a look at Jurassic World right here on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Recently, America got some enormously good news. The rate of abortion has dropped across the nation by an average 12%. This means millions of babies and their mothers are being spared the horrors of abortion and its long-term emotional aftermath. As someone who's been in this life and death battle for 40 years, it's very encouraging to see the body count drop. Of course, we won't stop until all babies are safe. This victory is due to many things. They include constant pro-life education, passing legislation, sidewalk counseling outside abortion bills, ultrasound, people giving their financial and prayerful support, and working to elect and voting for pro-life candidates. Join me in praying this modern-day Holocaust ends soon and all innocent human life will be protected.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Joining me today, the Reverend Chad Hoover. He's the head of theology department at Concordia Lutheran High School in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Also, the Integrated Campus Ministry Director there as well. And movie buff extraordinaire. Pastor Hoover, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Good to have you today. Thanks for being our guest and stepping aside from summer school. You have summer school going on this summer, don't you?
I am teaching summer school, yes.
Are you teaching a summer school theology?
I am, yes.
Cool. What do you cover during summer school, theology in summer school?
Yes, we decided, they have not offered it in the past couple of years, or I don't know, in any sort of recent history that I know of. I just came on board here in September, and so when the notice came out, hey, you know, who would like to teach summer school? I said, do you normally have theology classes for summer school? And she said, well, that would be kind of hard. The assistant principal said, that would be kind of hard, but I think we could do it if we made it just sort of a all-inclusive type covering all sorts of different things that would be, you know, give credit for anybody who maybe struggled in any of the classes throughout the year. So That's what I've done. I haven't told the student this, but I'm basically going through Luther's Small Catechism.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't told them that. But that's what we're doing.
But they might figure it out.
And they might figure it out. Some of them might think this sounds a little familiar. those are the topics that I'm hitting. I'm kind of hitting the six chief parts of Luther's Small Catechism for the most part. And it's 3 weeks long, 5 hours a day. So
wow.
It's a lot of time for us to sit in the classroom and study God's Word together. So
something tells me you don't sit the whole time.
No, we don't sit the whole time. We do take breaks, and we do take field trips.
I've seen you teach, or I've seen you in groups. I don't think you sit the whole time. That's
saying. I don't. One of the advantages of being in Fort Wayne, of course, we have Concordia Theological Seminary in town, and something I've always wanted to do with my students, but it was never practical, was to take them to campus there and attend a chapel service, because if any of your listeners have ever have an opportunity to attend a chapel service at either one of our seminaries, please do so, because it's a wonderful experience. And with the small class size that I have that opportunity to take them now. And so I've taken them twice so far. I'll take them again next week to the seminary for a field trip for chapel. And then we got a tour of the campus, and we also, yesterday we were there and we volunteered in the clothing co-op, which is like basically a free thrift store for the seminarians to go into and stock up on clothing and household goods and things like that.
Did I see pictures on Facebook? I think I saw pictures on Facebook.
I did post pictures on Facebook, yes.
Yes, you all were dressed up in the clothes that you were helping with.
Yes, we were having probably more fun than we should have been having, but it was good.
Do you ever talk about movies in your class?
On occasion I do, and usually it's like an afterthought. Like, I'll say, have you ever seen this movie? And then I'll start talking about it, and half of them haven't seen it. And then I realize what I need to do is just plan ahead and actually have a clip ready to show them and then talk about the clip. And in fact, that's been the idea of, you know, one of the other assistant principals and I are kicking around an idea of, you know, like a theology and movies type class to offer as an elective. And how fun would that be?
That would be awesome. Yes.
Great. Yeah. It would be a lot of fun because, you can dig into a lot of different theological themes based on movies, and maybe not so much delving them for theological truths, but delving them for, wow, look at the worldview that is presented in this movie and how opposite it is to everything that's presented in the Bible. And you can do that too.
Sure.
So it would be beneficial.
Man, that sounds like fun. I want to go to your high school. I mean, it sounds very educational. I want to go to your high school.
Yes, that's right.
Well, what a great way to help develop critical thinkers as well, to look at something in our world around us and look at it from a number of perspectives and to think critically about it. Right. And that's what I want to talk about today is the recent movie Jurassic World. And as I understand it, you had a chance to see it. I got to see it. My wife and I had a date night and got to go see Jurassic World. And I think some of our listeners have seen it. Now, had you seen the earlier movies in the, I had only seen, I think the first one, Jurassic Park.
Really?
I don't know if I've seen, how many are in the series?
There are three movies originally, and then this was the fourth movie that was just released.
I don't know if I saw the other movies. I know I have seen a Jurassic Park movie. What were the other, which would be the first one? What were the other ones about? Were they about dinosaurs too?
Well, yeah. The first one was just Jurassic Park, and it was actually based on a novel by Michael Crichton.
Uh-huh. Right.
Crichton. And I actually read the novel before the movie came out because I was working at the movie theater as a high school student when the original Jurassic Park movie came out in 1993. And so I read the book and watched the movie, and I enjoyed it. It's a classic movie. And then a few years later, they released The Lost World, which was Jurassic Park 2, which was also based on a Michael Crichton novel. He wrote a sequel to the movie, but not to his book. Figure that one out.
Huh.
And then there was Jurassic Park 3, which was released in like 2001. And that was probably, you could skip it if you've never seen it. It's not that great. but this one, this most recent one was actually pretty good. Of the sequels,
uh-huh.
It's probably the best sequel. That's pretty much what people have been saying, and I would agree with that too. It's probably the best sequel of all of the Jurassic Park movies.
And without revealing too much yet, why would you say it's the best sequel?
Well, I think the passage of time has allowed us to appreciate it a little bit more, and for a number of reasons. First of all, the special effects are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say special effects are pretty good, what I mean is they don't look fake. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't look like puppets, you know.
Yeah.
The computer generated images are pretty slick, and they do a really good job in this movie of just everything is very seamless and it looks good.
You mean those weren't real dinosaurs?
They were, let me check it up on the internet. Nope, those were not real dinosaurs. No.
I thought they really created the dinosaurs for the movie.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, they were so real.
You're right. Yeah, there were, I remember, well, a very touching moment in the movie. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but there was a very touching moment. And what was it, a brontosaurus or something like that?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Or brachiosaurus.
Brachiosaurus, I don't know.
Dinosaur names.
But it looked so very realistic. I don't know. To me, it was very realistic. I agree. I don't know if that was a puppet or
and
CGI.
It was just a fun movie. I think with some of the other sequels, they got a little bogged down in the story. I know that sounds bad, but it's true. I think this one was just, I could tell you the plot of the movie, your listeners, I could tell them the plot of the movie right now, and it wouldn't ruin the experience for them at all. It really wouldn't.
That's true.
Me telling you the plot is not going to matter at all, because this movie is just, it's fast-paced, there's a lot of action,
mm-hmm.
and it's enjoyable, it's entertaining. Is it a movie that, you know, is a deep thinking movie that you really got to think about and contemplate for days and days afterwards? And no, it's just fun. It's just a very fun movie.
Now, we saw it in the evening, and we're not late night people anymore. Since I host a morning program, we don't do
right.
late night dates, but we went to see it like at a 5 o'clock movie. But we were both thinking, man, I'm going to be awake the rest of the night because of all the action in the movie. And obviously, I don't think I'm revealing too much, and it's okay. We can just give a spoiler alert here that we're probably going to spoil this for some people, but because there are, big surprise, dinosaurs like chasing people and perhaps eating people, there's just so much action with that throughout the movie that by the end of the movie, I was tired from all the running, and then I just was afraid that it was going to be running through my mind the rest of the night, too.
Right.
Were you exhausted after the movie from all the running?
It was a little in the beginning, I mean, it took a little while to get going,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting. You know, it was kind of slow, but then once it got going, boy, did it get going. It was really fast. And this is very interesting, too, and it's a very different movie from the original Jurassic Park, because the original Jurassic Park, you don't really get a full-on glimpse of an actual dinosaur until well into the movie. But the story is riveting, because in the original Jurassic Park, this whole notion of dinosaurs that have gone extinct are now alive on this island off of Costa Rica. You know, the whole process of bringing these dinosaurs to the island was all this exposition that they were setting up, and all the, you know, the science fiction science behind all of that, you know? And so it was very interesting watching all of this and watching the development of this character, who was Dr. Hammond, you know, who's bringing all of these dinosaurs to the island and is bringing these scientists in because of problems on the island. You know, it was more of a story. It was very, very interesting. And here we are, you know, 20 years later, and we have the park now is operational. Apparently it's been operational for like 10 years. You know, that's kind of in the press. They don't really say in the movie, but, you know, you get the impression that it's been going on for a while. There are now thousands of people on this island, where this big tragedy had happened 20 years earlier.
20,000.
What's that?
20,000, I think it was. Wasn't
that
it?
How many people were supposed to be on the island?
I think it was around 20,000, something like that.
A lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so, and what's interesting is the themes that they present in the movie are kind of like very true. You know, like, well, you know, every time we introduce a new attraction or get a bigger dinosaur, or a dinosaur with more teeth, or a dinosaur with bigger claws, or a dinosaur that's more fierce, then the people come.
Mm-hmm.
But once we let that go for a while, people get like, oh, well, they're just dinosaurs, ho-hum. And so it's kind of that way with this movie. It's like they don't really hold back the dinosaurs. They just show us the dinosaurs right away. They don't show us the cool dinosaurs, you know, the big attraction dinosaurs until later. But right away, it's, hey, here are the dinosaurs. You know, no big deal. You've seen three of these other Jurassic Park movies already. Here are the dinosaurs. So there's nothing real special about that. But the special dinosaur, you know, they've created for this movie, which is actually a dinosaur that is never existed before. It's a dinosaur they created in a lab, you know.
Indominus Rex.
Yeah, they don't show that dinosaur, like a full-on shot of that dinosaur, till well into the movie, but they tease all throughout showing little bits and pieces of this dinosaur. So that's the only aspect that's a kind of a surprise, but everything else is just kind of like, you know, yeah, okay, fine. They've recreated dinosaurs and they've put them on their island, and it's like people take that, with the exception of basically one character, one little boy, you know, everybody else takes that as big deal. You know, they've got these dinosaurs in the silo. Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this one boy, like the main character boy, is so excited about these dinosaurs. But it's kind of interesting because it shows where we are as a culture, too, I think, with these Jurassic Park movies. Like, after a while, it's like, oh, there are dinosaurs. Big deal. You know?
Sure. Right. It's not that big of a thrill for us now. Yeah, I've been there. We've seen that already, so
right.
It's not that big of a thrill.
Yeah.
It's not an attraction. But you're right. They do kind of tease you with the new attraction that's about to be revealed. They're getting it. They're getting ready for this new attraction, this new, bigger, better, more teethy dinosaur.
Right.
And in the process of doing that, well, before I get to that, let me ask, do you think in the previous movies, there's a moral lesson in these movies? Is there a lesson to be learned? Do you think that there's something that the filmmakers want the audience to learn from their story?
Well, yeah, the themes of all of the movies are kind of the same, and this is where it's interesting too, as far as the faith and family aspect of it. I mean, obviously, you know, one of the themes of these movies is they see nature as being ultimately God, you know, in these movies, that you cannot go up against nature. That, and, you know, in the original movie, Dr. Ian Malcolm, who's played by Jeff Goldblum, says, you know, you kept asking yourself the question of whether or not you could, without ever asking yourself the question of whether or not you should create these dinosaurs. And that's the big premise of the first movie, and it's pretty much the theme of all of these movies, is should they be doing this? Should they be messing with nature and recreating something that nature has caused to go extinct? And actually, there's another great line from the original movie, too, that Jeff Goldblum's character says again, which is a line that makes absolutely no sense, but it's a line that's great nonetheless. He says, God creates dinosaurs. God destroys dinosaurs. God creates man. Man destroys God. Man creates dinosaurs. It's a hilarious line, but it's also a line that makes no sense, because that's one of the things about a movie like this, too, where, I mean, the whole premise of the movie is, you know, 65 million years in the making. It's talking about this old age view of the Earth that's 65 million years old as far as when the dinosaurs roamed the Earth, and that God ultimately does not exist in that viewpoint of the world. And so for Dr. Ian Malcolm to say this in the original movie, that God creates dinosaurs and then God destroys dinosaurs, and then sometime later, millions of years later, he creates man, it's inconsistent with the Bible, you know, as far as that time frame mm-hmm. is concerned. But I love his line of man destroys God, because when man destroys God, I mean, that's exactly what man has done. Man has destroyed God. As far as our, you know, viewpoint of do we need God in our lives? And that's precisely why the evolutionary viewpoint was created in the first place, is to say we want to explain this world around us without having to rely upon an all-powerful God who is the one who sets the rules and the norms for uh-huh. us and for our lives. We want to be able to dictate those things for ourselves. So though I don't think the filmmakers have that intention of having this be sort of a focal point of their movie, it ends up being one where it really undermines the scriptures when we talk about dinosaurs that existed 65 million years ago.
Hmm. Now, see, I was thinking it was a much simpler moral, like, don't try to play God or don't create something that can eat you.
Well, that's true, too. And that's ultimately what that line is from the original movie about Dr. Malcolm says, you know, it's like man has destroyed all notion of God, and yet we play God, you know, in creating these dinosaurs, you know, which is science fiction through and through, you know. But it's interesting that does become one of the themes. And it's not so much man against God, but because I think the filmmakers, for the most part, don't really acknowledge the existence of God, mm-hmm. It's man versus nature then. You know, nature has caused these things to go extinct, so we shouldn't go up against nature and mess with nature and throw off the entire ecosystem and all that kind of stuff. So,
or in this case, you know, in the past, it was about taking DNA and creating dinosaurs from that. This one, I think what's the big issue in this one? What's the big, I don't know, perhaps moral issue in this one when it comes to the science? It's more about genetic modification, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. In this one, there's that big, you know, discussion between two of the pseudo bad guys, you know,
yeah.
In this movie, there the one is, I guess the one guy isn't a bad guy. But there, you know, why did you create this big monstrous dinosaur that never existed before? And, you know, he gets mad. He goes, are you accusing me of bad science? You know, it's like, bad science. Are you kidding me? You're manipulating the genome and creating dinosaurs. Of course that's bad science, because, you know, it goes back to that first. Should you be doing this? Should you be messing with things mm-hmm. to this point so that you're bringing them into being? And then you're creating things that you have no idea how they operate and you have no means of controlling, because it's going to break out of its cage and eat people, which is exactly what happened.
What were there other family members that saw the movie? What were their reviews?
I did, yes. I actually, I brought my whole family, and I have, my oldest daughter is 13. I have another daughter who's 12 and a son who's 10, and then my youngest son is 8. And my wife and I really struggled with whether or not we were going to allow our 8-year-old to come with us. He had never seen the original movie. Neither had my 10-year-old son. But we thought he could handle it. And the way we do this, I mean, it's interesting, I think. We investigate movies before we take our kids. We really want to be sure that we're not exposing them to something that's really going to either alter their worldview, you know, change the way in which they see the world around them, or things that are just going to emotionally scar them. You know, we don't want to scare the pants off of our 8-year-old because we took him to a movie where dinosaurs are eating people. So we wanted to be sure that he was going to be able to handle it. And one of the ways that we do that is there's a website that's one we use all the time. It's called Common Sense Media. And we go to Common Sense Media, and they will lay out the content of a movie and just let you know, as a parent, what should you be concerned about. And it tells you more information and more detail than you want to know about the movie. But I like it because it at least informs you as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And you can read about it and see, is this something that I think my child can watch and handle and has the maturity to be able to understand and process.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that we did. And then also my wife especially went onto Facebook and just said, hey, we're thinking about bringing our 8-year-old son to see Jurassic World. Has anyone out there seen it? Has any of your kids seen it? Do you think this would be appropriate? And sometimes it just boils down to it's the kid. You know, sometimes certain kids can handle certain things and others cannot. And so it would just be wise to kind of know your child and to know what's in the movie and know whether or not you should say, you know what, I don't think this movie is going to be good for you, and just limit their access to these things. And for the most part, my kids have really appreciated that about us. I mean, my older daughter a few years ago was watching The Hunger Games, and she had never seen a PG-13 movie at that point in her life, you know, and so she was watching The Hunger Games and she started getting really frightened about watching this movie. And then she realized, you know what? My mom has given me permission to watch this movie, and I know that she wouldn't let me watch it if I couldn't handle it. So she relaxed. She knew that we were protecting her and not allowing her to watch things that weren't appropriate. And it gave her comfort to know that we were doing that for her.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's good for parents to know, you know, what it is that they're exposing their children to, not just to look at the rating. I mean, PG-13, you know, why is it PG-13?
Right.
There's a whole, you know, slew of reasons as to why a movie would be rated PG-13. Some would be reasons like this movie. It's violent. You know, people get eaten. And, you know, and it's a little scary. And then there are other reasons that people wouldn't want to watch a PG-13 movie, because maybe there's a lot of sexual innuendo.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of language. Or maybe there's just themes in there that really little kids should not be exposed to. So it's good to check movies out before you decide to go see them. We decided, after letting him watch Jurassic Park, our youngest son, that he absolutely loved it. And then talking with some other parents and looking at Common Sense Media, that we felt he could handle it. And so we took him, and he did fine. Somebody else's 8-year-old?
Maybe not.
That's
for
those parents to decide.
Right, right. Yeah, well, and I'm sure as a family, as parents, you talk about these films as well. You don't. Yes, it's fun to go watch them and be entertained by them, but something tells me that you guys probably have some discussion as well along the way, whether it's informal discussion in the car or around the dinner table or wherever, that it comes up in conversation.
It does, and that's the other thing too. You know, it's not like we just sent our son off with some friends to watch this movie. We probably wouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But we went together as a family, and we could sit with him, and, you know, we were kind of peeking over at him a little bit to see how he was doing with some of these parts, and he was absolutely fine. So
I was holding my wife's hand the whole time, so it was...
Oh.
It was...
so, I mean, it presents...
You weren't scared?
Opportunity. What's that?
You weren't scared?
I wasn't scared. No, I wasn't scared.
You weren't, like, holding onto your seat?
No.
Huh. You knew it was a movie. You just wrote it off as a movie. This is all fake.
It is. Yeah, I tend to, and I hate to say it, but the reason I saw the movie is because, you know, you had asked me to come on and talk about the movie. And so then there was just this little part of me, I kept trying to want to say, I just want to enjoy the movie. I don't want to overanalyze things and just trying to think about what to talk about. And so I had to just enjoy the movie. But it was an enjoyable movie to just watch as far as the action.
Mm-hmm. What did the kids have to say about the movie other than they enjoyed it? Did they have anything else to say?
I mean, they really loved the action and the adventure of it. You know, I mean, one of the things that when kids are younger and you start allowing them to watch movies, like when we first showed our older daughters Jurassic Park, you know, we were excited to show it to them because we remember seeing it, you know, when it first came out in the theaters, and we wanted to show them. And it's exciting for them to see movies that are that are a little more action-packed than what they are used to with some of the younger movies that they, you know, movies that are more appropriate for younger children. So they really like it. They like a lot of the humor. I mean, this movie does have a lot of humor in it. And they like the fantasy science fiction aspect of it too. I mean, they found that to be really cool. Dinosaurs are cool. Kids love dinosaurs. And so they love the fact that they showed all these different types of dinosaurs that they are familiar with the exception of the one they made up for the movie. Yeah.
Indominus Rex.
Yeah. I don't remember the name.
I only remember because the movie theater we went to, they had a drink special called the Indominus Rex, and I had to laugh. I did not have the Indominus Rex drink, but I had to laugh because they had a drink special named after the dinosaur that they made up.
All right.
And of course, it was a drink that was just made up, too.
Right. Sure. That makes sense.
Well, I as a movie, I enjoyed it. Yes, the 65 million, you know, old Earth view certainly was, that's something you want to talk about as you're viewing that with kids. And I'm glad you brought that up. But there were other things that that have come up throughout the movie. But overall, yes, it was entertaining, and it was there was a lot of action. It was a thrill. And never get in a giant hamster ball when you know that there are when there are, you know, giant dinosaurs roaming around as well, because it's not going to end well.
No.
Well, it did end okay, but because it's a movie, and so it had to end okay for them.
Yeah.
For most of them, but yeah, don't climb into a giant hamster ball if you know that there are giant dinosaurs around. And lastly, don't make something that can eat you.
That's probably the biggest point.
Any other points as we wrap up our conversation today?
Well, I mean, how much time do we have?
Probably just about another minute.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest things is people think that saying that dinosaurs are 65 million years old would blow the whole lid off the Bible. But the Bible actually does mention dinosaurs. It just doesn't mention the word dinosaur, because that word wasn't invented until the 1800s. But if you look at, especially in Job chapter 40 and 41, there's mention of two different types of dinosaurs. Actually, the one dinosaur, the Leviathan in Job 41, is very much like that water dinosaur in that movie. They've almost modeled it exactly after this Leviathan, except for the Leviathan in the Bible is fire breathing. And then the behemoth in Job chapter 40 is also what would be described as one of those brachiosaurs or those sauropods, dinosaurs. So there is evidence in the Bible that dinosaurs and man coexisted. And, Answers in Genesis has more information than you could possibly read on the existence of dinosaurs and man at the same time, as well as several articles on soft tissues in dinosaur bones, where they're finding blood vessels and protein cells and things like that are in the fossils. And those things, you know, confirm a young Earth view, because there's no way that those soft tissues found in fossils would be still there after millions and millions and millions of years.
It would have been way more interesting if they would have made the Leviathan fire breathing. And more
accurate.
It would
have been, and it would have been more historically accurate.
Too. Yeah, that would have been way more interesting. Did you know, have you heard about these hidden things from the earlier movies in this? Like, some might call them Easter eggs?
I noticed some of them, I think. And I did read something after I saw the movie and saw some of the other things that I'd missed when I watched it. But yeah, they did sufficiently reference the first movie and then conveniently neglected to mention the second and third movies.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including a Jurassic Park t-shirt in one of the scenes.
That was great.
They kept coming back, actually, over and over in the scenes. It was great. Well, thank you so much for taking time, one, to view this movie, and two, to talk about it with us. I'm so glad that we could share it with our listeners. What was the name of the website? Common Sense?
Common Sense Media.
And that's been a great tool for you and your family figuring out what is included in a movie, so you can decide whether or not it's a good choice for your family to go view together right. as a family. Well, thanks so much for being our guest again today on Faith and Family. Enjoy the conversation. The Reverend Chad Hoover, head of the Theology Department and Integrated Campus Ministry Director at Concordia Lutheran High School in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Thanks for being our guest and our movie theater extraordinaire guest on Faith and Family today, Chad.
Hey, anytime.